This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Last year, the Deaconess Foundation in St. Louis launched an initiative called Next Gen Grantmakers. Conceived to reimagine the future of philanthropy, Next Gen put decisions about funding youth programs in the hands of those with greatest insight into young people's needs, namely youth themselves. Deaconess partnered with the Youth Advisory Council at the local nonprofit Vision for Children at Risk to co-create a funding application process and prioritize issues and needs. NextGen Grantmakers awarded $100,000 in grants to five St. Louis area programs dedicated to community building, housing, mental health services, and substance use intervention for youth. Joining me now to talk about what it was like to be part of that work is Alicia Selman. Alicia is a junior at Harris Stowe State University and a member of the Youth Advisory Council at Vision for Children at Risk. Alicia, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you for having me. It's a great pleasure to be here.
So, Alicia, you've been involved with Vision for Children at Risk for a couple years now. What does your involvement with the organization look like?
Well, my involvement with the organization looks like planning for upcoming meetings with the other Youth Advisory Council leaders and when those meetings come up, having a hand in just, you know, cultivating the atmosphere at our meetings, making sure everybody is comfortable, everyone feels heard, and, you know, we just have a great time.
Mm-hmm. Now, you are a transplant to St. Louis. You came here to attend Harris Stowe University. How has Vision for Children at Risk helped you understand the struggles that young people in St. Louis face?
It has helped me understand the struggles that young people in St. Louis face by just putting me firsthand, as a firsthand witness in just, you know, seeing the youth, well, St. Louis's youth, because before coming to St. Louis for college, I didn't know anyone. I was completely new to, you know, the city and everything. So being around St. Louis's youth, I see firsthand what is going on, and the good and the bad. And I'm just, you know, grateful to be able to witness it all.
Mm-hmm. What are some of those specific struggles that you hear people talking about?
Really just everyday life, figuring out their youth, trying to navigate schooling, balance with family life and mental health, like just balancing all of that at once and being able to come to the Youth Advisory Council and just, you know, leave all that behind and just have a good time for an hour and a half. Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that you've learned from your peers at school about the things that that young people, and I'm talking about, you know, like age 17 through, you know, the early 20s, that they have trouble with or that they're thinking about?
I have learned that we all kind of go through similar things. Maybe it's in a different font or at a different time, but we can all come together and, you know, just talk about it and realize like, oh yeah, I went through that maybe like 6 months ago. Like, here's some advice on this. And then we can kind of help each other out, you know, during those times. But we think that we're all different, but we're really not. We're all kind of in the same, but we're just going through it at different times.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Deaconess Foundation began its Next Gen Grantmakers initiative in 2025. And from what I understand, the foundation decided to work with Vision for Children at Risk precisely because of this Youth Advisory Council that you're a part of. Alicia, when you and your fellow leaders found out that you would be driving a decision-making process that would give real money to organizations and programs that were specifically for young people, what went through your mind?
Well, it was all new to me. I was excited to be a part of the process because, you know, I love doing stuff like this. I love being put in a leadership position and making, you know, just choices for our youth, because I feel as a youth, I relate more closely than it would be if it was just maybe five adults from, you know, somewhere just like, oh, well, we're going to decide on this. So I was excited, but at the same time, I don't feel like I was nervous. More so like, you know, let's just get into this new adventure. Mm-hmm. And being able to, you know, put kind of my experience into making decisions for our youth, I was grateful to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything intimidating about it? You know, or were there, you know, like other or bigger feelings that you and your youth advisory council members had?
For me, it wasn't very intimidating, but I will say with some of the others, I feel like they were kind of nervous because, you know, it was such a big decision and we all wanted to, you know, come together. And I feel like sometimes we were kind of, I won't say butting heads, but just kind of agreeing to disagree on something. So we had to, you know, just put everything aside and be like, okay, here's the facts and this is what we need. We need to make a decision on this.
Mm-hmm. Now, Sanaria Suleiman is president and CEO at Vision for Children at Risk. And she said that the Youth Advisory Council was central to building out key elements for the Next Gen Grantmakers Initiative. There was an RFP, or request for proposals, mm-hmm. an application, and a scoring rubric. And she also stressed the importance of the Youth Advisory Council's knowledge and insight into what youth want and need.
We co-created a toolkit because this was really new to them and to the staff. So we wanted to create a toolkit right away. They led the way. They were very active in creating that toolkit. Part of that toolkit, of course, we created an RFP, the application and a scoring rubric. But even for the RFP, we discussed with them, we're like, where are some gaps? What are some activities that you really hope to see offered in the community? Where are those gaps and what can we do to bridge those gaps? So as a body, they brainstormed about what they wanted to see more happening in their community. And that basically guided the RFP language and even the application.
So, Alicia, what did you and your peers end up bringing up when it came to the gaps that you saw?
Well, we brought up 5 key things. We wanted to see more equity and inclusion, more transparency, more capacity building, accessibility, and creativity and innovation. Meaning, we wanted to see more of the city's youth at the forefront, like us, making decisions and being able to decide what they wanted to do. I brought up, like, we need more third spaces for our youth because things that I grew up with have been taken away or the age requirement has been raised. So by bringing up things like bringing back justice or places like Sweet and Sassy. So we said we want to see more of those spaces and things that our youth can do.
Mm-hmm. Did any of that seem to surprise the adult staff that you were working with?
Yes, most definitely. They were very surprised at a lot of our answers. Like, I hadn't even thought about that. Like, it was a lot of those going around like, wow, I never thought of this in this way. So they were very surprised with our answers.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to introduce another voice to this conversation. Rob Donnelly is the founder and executive director of Opportunity House, a nonprofit focused on housing and support for young people ages 17 to 24. It was one of the Next Gen Grantmakers Initiative's 5 awardees. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Thanks for having me.
So, Rob, Opportunity House is a relatively young organization, and pretty early on, its work focused on a specific population of St. Louis's youth. Why is that the case?
Yeah, so we initially started Opportunity House looking at doing community-based housing opportunities to keep young people in their supportive communities geographically. We made the transition very early on to expand that definition to include communities of shared identity and pivoted to serve young people in the queer community, recognizing that there is young people in the queer community are at an elevated risk for becoming homeless and experiencing the a number of challenges that come with that. So that's why we made our pivot to serve the queer community exclusively in our current housing program.
Mm-hmm. Alicia, is that something that came up in the conversations among the youth and with the adults even before you completed the toolkit?
No, I wouldn't say it came up before we completed the toolkit. We wanted to be inclusive with, you know, with what we picked. So when his application came up and we read over it and everything, I was like, this sounds, you know, perfect for what we want to represent when we, you know, do this grant process.
Mm-hmm. Rob, grant funding is something that's essential for nonprofits like Opportunity House. And submitting applications for grants requires a great deal of forethought. It takes a lot of labor. What drove your organization's decision to put such work into applying for funding that you might not have even gotten, you know, through the NextGen Grantmakers Initiative?
Yeah, I saw it as a really great opportunity to, I don't want to say test our program and see how how young people respond to our population or our approach. But it really did give us the opportunity to, I think, connect with younger people, to ensure that what we were doing also resonated with them and what they identified as a need in our community. Mm-hmm. Because it is so often, you know, our funders are not 18 to 24-year-old making decisions about, the funding. And this gave us that opportunity to, again, to see how young people respond to our program and what we have to offer the community.
Mm-hmm. Well, clearly, what you wrote did resonate with Alicia and her peers on the Youth Advisory Council, as well as maybe some of the adults who were working with you all. And you did not get to see, Rob, the other applications, but when you were going through that process for Opportunity House and you were thinking about youth being the ones reading it, I mean, did that change the way that you approached the proposal that you put in?
I don't think it changed the approach to the proposal. It changed the enthusiasm, I think, for submitting the proposal, I think, is where there was the shift for me. It was no longer me sending a proposal out to a foundation that someone I will maybe never talk to is going to read and evaluate. It was young people in our community who are responding to the needs of young people in the community. That's where I think the shift was for me in submitting the application.
Mm-hmm. And just to make sure that I'm getting this right, Alicia, had you ever read a grant application or proposal before?
No, that was my first time. I've never done anything like this before.
Mm-hmm. So when you were reading through the proposals that came in, did you feel like they were written for you and for young people looking at these applications?
I don't feel as though, like, the people that were submitting their applications changed what they were putting in to be more fitting to, like, the youth mind, because they weren't very long. So, I mean, that doesn't really have anything to do with it, but I don't feel like they really changed their language. Some of them, you know, some stood out more than others, but as we were doing reading through the applications, I had to keep reminding the other youth, like, because we had to, you know, make a quick decision. And being a business student, I was like, we have to keep a business mind, because with this grant, who do we want to represent us as a whole? Like, the people that we pick, they have to reflect back on us as a, you know, a business, or even for, like, the, you know, the YAC and the Deaconess Foundation.
Mm-hmm. Now, the funds that were available, it was $100,000 total. I would have been intimidated by making a decision about where that much money would go. $20,000 total went to each of the five organizations that were selected, or the programs. Rob, what have those funds been supporting, mm-hmm, in real life, not just on paper?
Yeah, one of the main pieces that it supports is the delivery of mental health services to our residents. One of the other pieces that this funding has allowed is for us to add part-time case management to our organization, which has helping our residents connect to employment opportunities, education opportunities, providing that additional layer of support that supports their overall health and well-being that without this funding would have been, you know, at least for the current time, out of reach for us.
Mm-hmm. And mental health services specific to LGBTQ youth, how has that been a critical support? Is there an example you can provide?
Yeah, so we have one of the great things about, you know, we have had our funding come in and being a small organization and being, you know, we're able to be really flexible. So we work collaboratively with any of our residents who want to access mental health services to identify what specifically they're looking for in a therapist, whether it's someone who is a member of the queer community, someone who identifies as female, Black, African American, and we are able to then go out and work with them to find a therapist who's going to meet those needs. It's not, you know, for us, it's not about having a therapist on standby who everyone sees. It's being able to be really flexible and fluid to make sure we're meeting their needs in whatever that might look like.
Mm-hmm. Alicia, what is it like to hear what Rob is talking about?
It's a direct reflection of what I conveyed to the group, because I was like, we need KPIs, these key performance indicators that are reflecting back on us to see what he's talking about, because that's not really offered a lot at all. This is my first time hearing of something that's being done like this, so it's great to see.
Mm-hmm. And one part of the program will be to visit with the programs that have been awarded this grant funding, as I understand. And you are one of the older of the Youth Advisory Council members. I wanted to point that out because even at junior year in college, you are working with younger people.
Yes.
Is there something that you learned from the younger members of YAC?
I learned from the younger members of YAC to just slow down, take a moment to just laugh and be in the moment, because as I'm getting older, things are getting more serious. And so when I'm with them, I'm able to just, you know, relax and just, it's like I'm back in middle school again.
So being able to laugh is another KPI.
In a way, yes.
Yeah. Now, Bethany Johnson-Javwa is president and CEO of the Deaconess Foundation, and she said that Next Gen Grantmakers Initiative is just one part of the foundation's vision for generational impact and change. And she said that witnessing young people at work making decisions about real, tangible funding, again, it was $100,000 of it, that it's shone a light on what youth can do.
And it presumes a strength. You know, it presumes a celebration of possibility just by virtue of who young people are, the things that they have been through, especially coming out of the pandemic timeframe, right? And so it's been really exciting to see that they shared with us that there was a level of rigor. There was a level of them taking it seriously. The responsibility was weighty for them. You know, they sparred with each other in ways to really challenge their ways of thinking and come up with the best solutions. They felt what it feels like for us when you have multiple opportunities to fund, but you can't do everything. So then how do you make strategic decisions for the best outcomes possible? They really grappled with that. And for us to see the level of seriousness and leadership was exciting and inspiring for us. And the us has become a we.
Alicia, what do you think of what Bethany Johnson-Javwa said about that us becoming a we? You know, did you feel like it was a we that, you know, you and the Youth Advisory Council leaders were working together and were actually doing some leading?
Yes, I most definitely do agree with what she said. We really had to work together and, you know, hold each other accountable during this process, as the young people would say, lock in. Uh-huh, right. We really had to lock in. And we all, you know, we took it seriously from the moment we found out. It wasn't like a play process. So I most definitely agree.
Mm-hmm. Now, Bethany mentioned some of the back and forth, and earlier you had said that there was some agreeing to disagree. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that you all did not necessarily see eye to eye on, but came to some agreement upon? I mean, is there an example that you can share?
I was the main person that was conveying to the rest of the group, like, I don't feel as though we should pick 10 and spread the money thinly. We should pick 5. And because I said, this may be a little controversial, but if I was applying to a grant and it said that we were able to get $20,000 and we only got 10, I would be a little mad. So let's pick those 5 that really stood out, that really gave us what we asked for in this application. And we see the vision, like they really broke down what they will be doing with the money, and we are able to see it actually help our youth, then I feel like it's well worth it to just agree to disagree, like on these top 5 instead of this top 10.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm looking at Alicia, but I feel the smile from you, Rob, on the other side. Why is that?
Yeah, you know, so often when you're requesting money from donors, you ask for a number, and a lot of times they say, that's great. We want to fund you. We'll fund you at 70%. It's actually the reverse happened in this case. We were awarded, Alicia and her team awarded us more than what we requested. And hearing just that focus on, you know, the forward thinkingness of like, this is what we committed to. This is what we offered. We're seeing, you know, we've identified the organizations that can have the impact. I mean, that's a lot coming from, you're a junior in college, but you're also working with folks who are much younger and bringing them along to that thinking. It says a lot about what young people can do if they're empowered with the tools and resources to give and support the community.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that the Deaconess Foundation's Bethany Johnson-Javois said is that this initiative reflects some rethinking about its structures and how it can benefit from young people's leadership. And she added that its investment in that is not symbolic. I understand that Opportunity House has planned something maybe along those lines.
Yeah, it was after we received the funding, I sat down with a member of my team and our new case managers, and we talked about how can we replicate something similar on a much smaller scale, but similar for the young people in our program, our residents, to be able to learn the leadership skills, to be able to make decisions about how to support their immediate internal community to Opportunity House, as well as the broader community. So we're rolling out in our next upcoming fiscal year, what we're calling our Resident Action Fund, which is just a small pool of money that our residents will be able to decide how it's used. It could be, hey, we need a new dryer for one of our apartments, or it could be we want to make an investment and contribute and support another cause in the community. So really taking what we've learned from this experience and the opportunity that we had with NextGen to be able to replicate some of those ideals into the work that we do.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of that, Alicia?
I think it's great. I think that was also in his application because I remember reading something along the lines of that. And I was like, this is very innovative and this is something that's never been done before. Like, this has to be top 5.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is all, like everything that we've talked about, it's simultaneously about the money. It's also not about the money. Mm-hmm. You know, why does it matter at the small scale and the big scale, Alicia?
I say it matters at the small scale and the big scale because if we don't see much of our youth getting to make decisions like these, and even just this one, you know, process, this one time, it just really matters because you see what's being done when youth does get to make decisions. We're helping more youth. So I feel like this should happen more often because if one person or maybe the right person is able to see what's being done, then like he said, it will be picked up and done more often.
Mm-hmm. Rob, why does it matter, especially for an organization of your size?
When we received, we're a small organization, so when the money comes in, I'm always excited, always updating our board about, you know, what's happening. And I remember sending the email when we received this award and the excitement that I had because not only were we awarded funding, but it was coming from young people who are able to recognize and see what the community needs, and giving them the power to support the community in the way that they see it needing the support from their perspective, I think says a lot about the work that we get to do, and the Deaconess Foundation and Alicia and all the other young people, you know, it says a lot about what they can do if empowered and given the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. How does this approach challenge the way capital P philanthropy operates in a, you know, in a 1 minute, Rob?
Oh, I only get 1 minute for that. I think it says a lot about what we do, what we can do if we take the dollars and really empower the community to make the decisions. You know, we can shift the conversation from quantity of what we deliver, you know, the number of meals provided, the number of nights of care, and really shift it to thinking about, as Alicia said, those KPIs. What's the impact that we're going to have, and how can we be creative in having that impact? You know, and this is just an example of how we can start doing that when it comes to philanthropy. Mm-hmm.
Rob Donnelly is the founder and executive director of Opportunity House, a St. Louis nonprofit that provides housing and support for young people ages 17 to 24. And Alicia Selman is a junior at Harris Stowe State University and one of the youth leaders that is part of the Vision for Children at Risk Youth Advisory Council. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Elaine Cha. Production assistance and editing by Lila Halilbashich.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.